This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Jewels of Illuminations books 1-3 box set is out. Open is a broken man who might find redemption guarding a scholar from bandits, a criminal syndicate, and a dark necromancer. Avina is a woman haunted by guilt who has to learn if she can trust Open. Together, they can break free of their past or be lost. You can buy Jewels of Illumination book 1-3 from Amazon. Today, I'm joined by Bran J. Alexander. He is the author of the fantasy novel Rise of Tears, Tears of Hatsune 1.
How are you doing today, Brand?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. I kind of always like to start out my interviews with a fun question. So, Brand, are you a cat person or a dog person?
Dog person. I like cats and dogs, but I just like the pack dynamic of dogs.
So, how long have you wanted to be an author?
As long as I can remember. Going all the way back, my mom used to... I have a stuffed dragon that I got for my first Christmas. And my mom used to come in and when she would like read me bedtime stories, they weren't even stories. They were stories that we made up together. So I always kind of loved making stories up. And then second grade, I ended up winning some award for a short story that I wrote in class. And then I kind of knew, but I've been dreaming of it pretty much my whole life.
I keep hearing about these elementary schools that let children write short stories. And I'm like, I never went to that elementary school.
The high school was worse for me. The high school was the one that almost broke me because I had a horrible creative writing teacher who despised fantasy and thought it was a deplorable genre that completely demeaned all other literature.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a great guy. They didn't have creative writing in my high school either. We had like English. We had technical writing or English. And that was our choices.
We had a pretty decent school. There were a lot of options and... But, yeah, no, I could have done without that creative writing class. It almost broke me.
Maybe there was a creative writing class, and I just took a bunch of computer classes, even though I wanted to be an author. It was really – I hated English, even though I wanted to be an author.
I wasn't a fan of English. I used to get into arguments with teachers. Not, like, argument, but, like, debates with teachers. I had an American literature teacher who insisted that literature was only supposed to be interpreted the way her little yellow book said. And could be interpreted no other way. And it just, I had a literature teacher in seventh grade who was like, opened my mind to, you know, literature and, you know, you can interpret literature is meant to be interpreted differently by everybody. And it's an artwork. It's, you know, the same as looking at a painting and different people see different things. And then I went into high school and she said, you know, everything has to be exactly like this. I despise The Great Gatsby simply because of what she put me through with it.
Yeah, I never read any good books in English classes. They always made you read the classics, whereas I wanted to read, like, fantasy books.
Oh, no, I agree. The only one that I can say that I actually really liked reading was, I want to say it was fifth grade. Now, I had already read it 2 years before, but it's not a fantasy book. It's Where the Red Fern Grows.
Okay. I got to read The Secret of Nim in the sixth grade. I think that was it. Secret of Nim.
I never actually read The Secret of Nim, but
it's good.
On VHS. I used to have it on VHS, and I watched it all the time.
Yeah, no, I love that movie, so I was really excited to read the book, because, you know, I love the, I'm a kid of the 80s, so I was scared by the Don Bluth cart, you know, animated movies from the 80s, you know, All Dogs Go to Heaven, Secret of Nim, what else did he traumatize kids with? Land Before Time, you know, maybe, because there's some scary stuff in that.
Oh, yeah, no, The Tree Stars, and I'll always be with you, Littlefoot. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I saw all that stuff. That came out when I was a kid.
I was born in 80, so I went through all the 80s.
I was a
Man and She-Ra kid, and I just saw somebody today talking about how it was the cartoons on Saturdays back in the 80s, and I'm like, yeah, I used to watch Dungeons & Dragons every single Saturday.
Yeah, I remember that show. Well, let's talk about your books, though. So you have a book, it's called Rise of the Tears. It's the first book of the Tears of Hatsune. What's it about?
Well, it starts, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic, semi-post-apocalyptic world. The gods pretty much destroyed themselves 1,000 years before. World's a much diminished place. It never quite recovered, but it's kind of settled into a sort of balance. And that's where a tribe of people now exists called the Concho Gall, basically in the ravaged leftovers of the world that the gods left behind. Follows the main character, Asan, who is the son of the chieftain. He's just reached the age where he is coming of manhood and starting to take up his place as basically the heir to the chieftain and starts to have some of authority within the tribe. And as he kind of rises up and takes on his role, he begins to discover that everything he kind of thought he knew about his people and his father and his world just are wrong. Or at least they are simplified versions of what they actually are. You know, he believed in his father as a hero, and his father's kind of a mighty person, but he also makes tons of mistakes and doesn't really rule the people the way they need to be. He pictures the world as his homeland as this beautiful, harsh world that forges their people, when he begins to discover that it's actually the wasteland left over from a divine paradise that used to be. And as he goes, he has to kind of challenge all those different parts about himself that and his people that he didn't really fully understand. Kind of learning who his people are, why they are. And on top of that, they end up being hunted by a group of people who are hunting them for the reason, for who these people are. And in the process, he ends up conflicting with his father over his everything and kind of going through a whole bunch of turmoil of discovering that your father isn't always the person you think they are. And I always go slightly blank on these. I can sit down and do a whole synopsis of my book really well, but you put me on a microphone and my brain goes 12 different directions.
All right, fair enough. So besides our main character, any other characters of note, him and his father, but anyone else?
There's Old Dern. Okay. Old Dern is kind of the ancient storyteller who teaches the history of the tribe. He's the one who kind of, every 10 years, the Concho Gall, this tribe, there's 10 clans. Every 10 years, the 10 clans gather for something called the Dahara. And this is that year, and this is kind of the first year that Asan's going to go and attend the Dahara with the 10 other clans as, you know, a man for the first time. So Dern kind of shows up and begins to tell him, you know, you don't really understand what you need to in preparation for this, and begins teaching him. And he has tons of lore and tons of knowledge about the history of the world. And he's the one that begins kind of teaching him, you know, this is what the world actually used to be. This is, he tells him all the different stories about the gods and how they were and what the world used to be like before, and kind of teaching him his people's purpose. The Concho Gall, roughly translated, is seekers of the greatness lost, but they kind of lost their purpose of what the greatness lost is. The gods are dead, so there's really not much purpose in searching for the greatness lost when the people that brought it are dead. And so it's kind of a challenge. There's Dern. There's another main character is Ilewa, which is actually the horse. The Concho Gall ride giant horses, kind of Clydesdales on steroids. Really, but they're also highly intelligent, and Ilewa is Asan's mount and is kind of a side character.
All right. So what was the inspiration behind it?
A couple things. Like, I know, so one of my big things is it was kind of a reflection on organized religion and faith and how it can be used in different ways. How people develop faith in different ways. It's been 1,000 years since the gods are dead, but religion still exists. People still use religion to control people, and so it kind of built from there. Beyond that, it also built from the fact that when I was going through chemo for stage 4 cancer, back before I actually wrote this book, I kind of sat through chemo designing my universe in a way, and kind of built it around the story of divinity and how it came into this world. So that kind of began the inspiration for it. I kind of wanted to see where religion and faith could go through a world without gods. And it led into more aspects of faith, such as Asan's faith in who his father was. But it turns out that his father isn't actually the man he thought he believed he was when he, you know, takes off the glasses of youth. His father's faith in their people and their might, which comes up lacking. Lots of different aspects of faith going through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. Like, take like the Soviet Union, right? So they were a completely secular nation, right? For instance, when a couple was on their wedding day, right, you would get married in the, before I think whatever their equivalent of the justice of the peace was, right, some, you know, appointed secular official, but the couple would have to lay, like as tradition, would lay flowers at a statue of Lenin as like an offering to him, even though they're not technically religious, they still revered Lenin like a religious figure. On Lenin's, I believe on his birthday, or the nearest Saturday to his birthday, every worker was supposed to come in and work for free as a support of the sort of Soviet nation to show their support of Leninism and stuff. So just like you can take away religion, but like there's something about humans that create that sort of belief system and feel it in other ways.
Yeah, and it kind of explores that, but it also goes into just the different ways that religion, organized religion, faith can be manipulated in people to do things. The main beginning of the whole entire story is basically they have a spy that's coming to look at the Khonshogol, and when they go to investigate who the spy is and go to investigate who sent the spy, it turns out that there is a new religion rising to the south. There's not much about them, but they are hunting the Khonshogol, and that religion basically goes around and more with force of arms, taking over different cities and taking over different people and turning them over to their religion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, what is it? 10% of humans are sociopaths, and sociopaths are always find way to use systems to increase their own power and, you know, rely on sort of the naivety of more normal humans, right? Who are trusting and don't think that, you know, you're supposed to manipulate everyone to get what you want and all that, you know, stuff. And yeah, so that's the problem with any system, right? Like anyone can get into there and then abuse it and manipulate it and
Well, like in my book, it's not only the humans that are like that, the gods. Actually, it goes into mentioning just a kind of a brief mention of the creation of the soul, or at least the identity of the soul being identified and treated as something substantial, was only done for the simple purpose of to have the threat to basically promise somebody that you can live eternally through this if you do things right, or if not, we will send you to eternal damnation. And until they needed that trick to basically control the masses, the soul wasn't even mentioned or basically focused on that much.
Interesting. Okay. So, how did you tackle sort of the world building behind it? Did you kind of really build out this entire world and all the details, or did you just kind of wing it as you wrote, or how'd that go?
No, I went through and built all kind of the world through the history, because there's two different aspects of the world as you're traveling through it. With Old Dern kind of telling the stories, you have the world that they now exist in, but you also have numerous reflections as you go through of what the world used to be, kind of that greatness lost. So like as you're going through the Highlands, you begin to see, which is their homeland, you begin to see kind of the reflections of, you know, this is the barren waste here. They call it the Ridgelands, but it actually used to be the Riverlands, where, you know, all these empty ridges that kind of cut through the land used to be, you know, rivers for as far as the eye could see. And you kind of go through all these little in-depth pieces of before and after and how that kind of changed the world. Right now, I've only in the first two books, it only focuses on one central, like the Highlands going through. But now that I'm working on book three, it kind of expands into the rest of the world. But I've kind of built up the different histories behind what the world used to be, the world used to be there and what they are now. And kind of all of my people are reflections of the world in themselves. They are, I consider my world kind of primitive in a sense, because all of the people are very strongly connected to the land and kind of reflect the land and everything that they built from. They don't really diverge from it much.
Okay. right. So so you planned a lot of this out ahead of time is what I was actually asking, kind of. Like, how much, yeah, like, how did you, like, just sit down and, you know, come up with, like, the nuts and bolts, you know?
Basically, it's mostly just brainstorming, but I sit down with a notebook and I write, you know, everything that I kind of plan out. I have a map that I've kind of, that I've drawn up of each of the lands. I kind of build out the history of the lands and how, you know, each little piece kind of built into the next. Yeah, I basically sat down and planned out how every land kind of formed and based and how it came to be.
Cool.
Between when the gods had died and the 1,000 years later.
All right. So when it comes to your writing, do you like plot out what you're writing, or do you just kind of, you know, pants it?
I'm a little of both. I know the major points in between. I know a lot of the stuff in between already, but I don't really do outlines. I kind of go and connect. I think the way I referred to it as once is I kind of have the lattice and the framework built out, and then I put all the potential into the seeds of my characters and plant them and just kind of let it flesh it out and grow and take up. So I'm kind of a mix of both. I have a lot of structure where I know all of the main points that the story needs to go to. I know kind of generally what needs to happen in between, and then I kind of build it as I go to reach those points.
Okay, cool.
I always know the end of my story before I start. Like, I know exactly how it's going to end. I usually have that climax scene in my mind the whole time I'm writing towards it.
Do you do that for, like, the entire series or just for book to book?
This series will be 5 books when it's completed, and I know the climax of every single book from here to there, and I know the entire series arc, and, yeah, no, I have the whole entire thing planned.
Cool. All right. So, what is next in your writing career for you?
Right now, I'm working on writing book 3 for Tears of Fatsune.
Okay.
That's my big goal for this year, is to complete that. I have a novella series, Guardians of the Tide. I released the first one a while back, and I have the second one completed. I just need to get it prepped for publishing. I'm hoping to publish it this summer if I don't just get completely consumed by Tears of Fatsune and decide to stick with that.
Okay.
But those are the two main things right now is sticking through. Right now I'm trying to build up readership. But writing Tears of Fatsune 3, Tears of the Fallen is my big goal right now.
Nice. All right. So I did notice that there was something I wanted to ask and I just really remembered it. I did notice that you changed your covers recently.
Yes.
Yeah. They're. I just want to say I rather like them. So I just. What is the thought process like? Why do authors change their covers?
Okay. Well, when I started, I did. I'm on a very limited finances, so when I first began, I designed my own covers. I did the best that I could with what I had. I'm super proud of them, but I realized that they were not up to, you know, professional standards. Working with a few people recently, Mike Levin, who helps with Fantasy Sci-Fi Focus, he got to talking to me and he, you know, kind of discussed the covers. And I told him, you know, I'm not super, I mean, I'm proud of my covers, but I know that I need better covers. And that's when he helped work out to get me in touch with somebody, and I was able to come up with the money and have them redesigned. And yeah, I'm very proud of the covers. I have my first print copies coming in the mail. They just got mailed out today, so hopefully they'll be here in the next couple of days, so I'll actually be able to see the covers in person.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, there's you have to do a lot as an indie author, but if you don't have the skills to do photo manipulation or paint or something, don't make your own covers. If you can have at all of what, and I understand it's expensive, but it'll help. Because your cover is like your first thing that readers see, right? It's your first bit of marketing. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I have short stories out there that have some pretty terrible covers.
I have 4 short stories, like a short story series that I do. Every Halloween, I do a huge transformation of the yard over to like a dark fantasy basically yard haunt, Ravenfell Manor, and people talked me into publishing the stories that I write about the history. So I have like 4 short stories, and those are all done by me.
I didn't do them. I found someone on Fiverr, but they're still pretty bad.
I don't think mine are horrible. As I said, I know they're not up to standards, and that's...
Yeah.
I don't know if you had seen my older covers.
I had seen the older covers for your series, the Hatsune one. But
no, the others are definitely an improvement. I'm very happy with them.
Anyways, where can the readers connect with you on the internet?
You can connect with me on Facebook. Search for Brand J. Alexander. Twitter, at Brand J. Alexander. You can find my website, brandjalexander.com. I pretty much try to communicate mostly through all of those forums.
Okay. Well, it was really great talking with you.
Nice talking to you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com. And follow me on Twitter, at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.